Everyone is equal. Everyone has a place. No one is written off because there is worth and goodness in every life. Straight from the Declaration of Independence, that is the Republican ideal. And if we won't defend it, who will?
For my father, impossible is just the starting point. That's how he approaches business projects. That's how he approaches life.
What do you say that we unify this party at this crucial moment when unity is everything? Fellow Republicans, what we have begun here, let's see this thing through. Let's win this thing.
And this week, my father will stand before you as our party's nominee for the President of the United States of America.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the program. It is Wednesday, and it's July 20th, 2016 at 5:10. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to another business day as well as we hit midweek here with the heat and humidity building here in Chicago, the excitement building in the Cleveland area with the Republican convention hitting full steam now with a nominee. All of that in the world today. We'll follow those stories. But right now, we want to give you the very latest intel from the overnight world of business. And at the WGN Market Desk this morning, we find the Dow futures pointing in a direction that is in positive territory right now, 78 points up. The S&P NASDAQ futures look good as well. As Vic told you, around the world, the markets seem to be doing well in Europe, and Asia seems to be lower than it was yesterday, but Europe's doing much better than it was yesterday. A couple of stories making the news today. Benchmark U.S. crude oil rose above $45 a barrel. U.S. stocks finished higher yesterday, mixed on a three-day rally after a three-week rally. Also yesterday, Microsoft's investment in cloud computing showed it was paid off. The latest financial report from the software company shows its cloud computing business more than doubled in sales from last quarter. Microsoft spent billions on that. The growth in Microsoft's cloud business combined with increased revenue from Windows had sales of that software company over $22 billion yesterday. Also, we learned that New York, Massachusetts, and Maryland are suing Volkswagen and its affiliates Audi and Porsche over diesel emissions cheating, accusing the German automaker of defrauding customers, misleading them, and also New York states demanding their money back to pay for also for the cleanup of all of this, for emissions education programs, a comprehensive program, they call it, those states do. They're all working together and suing those companies that faked those emissions tests. Also, Macy's is testing a mobile tool using artificial intelligence that lets shoppers get answers to customize the store they're in, customized to the store they're in, like, for instance, where a particular brand is located or what's in stock. They can normally ask a sales associate for that face-to-face, but this tool is so far the largest from a department store chain that is called a mobile companion. We've seen these things in other stores and even in restaurants around the world, little robots that are helping customers, in some places actually serving customers, in Burger King, for instance, one of those stores using that around the world. And that brings us to Pokemon. Are you playing that Pokemon game? It is sort of a level of virtual reality that is taking off, but there are all kinds of other forms of virtual reality as well. So we thought it might be good to talk to one of the Chicago companies who's at the forefront of all of this. Chloe Miller is with MillerandMiller.tv in Chicago. It is a boutique live action and digital production representation film. And Chloe is with us this morning via Skype to talk a little bit more about this. Chloe, is first of all, welcome to The Opening Bell. Is it fair to say that virtual reality is blowing up?
Absolutely. I think this year is by far going to be the biggest breakout year for virtual reality. The Wall Street Journal, I think, has put out a quote saying that by the end of 2025, everybody will own a VR headset, and this is the breakout year for that to start. So you're absolutely correct with your timing, with 2016 being the year of virtual reality and augmented reality.
Is it one industry over the other? Is it going to be gaming, movies, or is it all of the above?
It's all of the above. I think you're going to have some outliers within you're going to have some outliers in the industry with gaming and with like augmented reality games as well. Movies probably won't be as big in the virtual reality world because there are some constraints in what you can do as far as time inside a headset. But augmented reality, I think, could be applicable to almost any industry, especially for branding with advertising, which could result in just about anything between gaming, live install events, and, you know, short form movie films.
I know that your background is in the video aspect of this, the movie aspect of this. Did you agree with what Steven Spielberg said about us possibly losing this old art of movie making with this new virtual reality stuff?
Yeah, he makes a really good point. He has been quoted saying that he thinks it's a dangerous medium because it's allowing the viewer to create their own narrative, which with in basic sense of explaining what virtual reality is compared to regular narrative storytelling with a flatty or what you would see on TV or a movie, you're being told what the story is. You're passively engaging with this video or any kind of content you're watching. The difference with VR is, or 360 videos, you're actively choosing what you're looking at. So the narrative is much more open-ended of what you want to see and what you want to get out of the experience, where in traditional media with a movie, the director's showing you what you were looking at. You only have one screen to look at. You can't turn your head up or down, left or right. With VR, you can, and you can get a different experience than the person next to you.
And you can almost sort of make different scenes and realities and something other than what maybe the movie maker had wanted you to see, right?
Absolutely. Like I said, you can have multiple experiences. So you could, in essence, have three stories within the same narrative, but based on what the viewer has chosen to look down or what street they turn on in the film can give you a different outcome.
I'm guessing because you're in this industry, you probably, there's some point where you disagree with Steven Spielberg. Do you think the two can live with each other? Or is there room for both? Or
yes, there's definitely room for both. I do understand his concern by saying, because he's a, you know, a very traditional filmmaker, and he's been very successful in that medium of creating his idea and sharing it with the world and the world taking it in positively. But I think at the same time, there's also, this is a new technology that is allowing brands and other filmmakers and other technologically advanced directors to get involved in this new medium and share stories and share brand experiences specifically for advertising, but in other formats of in other industries as well.
There seems to be industry leaders emerging from this. Magic Leap is one of them. I know you're familiar with that. Maybe you could tell us who are the industry leaders? Who's going to emerge as the big boys on the block on this?
That's a good question. Magic Leap is definitely going to be something I would suggest to keep an eye on, because that is just incredible technology of creating an augmented reality with an overlay on top of our real world. So we're looking at something in the real world, but yet we can see something additionally on top of that. So that isn't necessarily physically there. You can't touch it, but you can see it and interact with it. I think that that's something that is going to be a great opportunity for just what the future holds. It's like you can do so much with this, and you can really take it with any direction that you want.
So what kinds of things are you involved in, and how does it differ from some of the stuff like we would see at Magic Leap or from Steven Spielberg?
We do a lot of VR films. So with that, there's three different types of VR. You have, you have your flatty, which I guess it is your traditional medium. So you have your broadcast videos or your content videos that you passively ingest by watching on your TV or your computer. And then there's three categories within the VR world, which is 360, and then you have VR, and then you have VR room scale. 360 video allows you to look and put a headset on, and you look in a full 360-degree visual spectrum. The VR is an immersive video experience that's stereoscopic, which is another layer of the 360. So on top of the 360 video view you have sound or another sense that's incorporated into it to entice you to turn your head to look left, so that you can turn down that path if you're watching a video or something. So there's a little bit more of a narrative behind the VR stereoscopic on the experience. And then the last one is the VR room scale, which is something that I think has a lot of potential, which is where really the future is going to be within VR, which is what we're really starting to get into with advertising. Right now, VR is breaking in, but VR room scale is where the most potential is. Room scale means you put on a headset and you also hold on to these handhelds, which basically give you a tool within your virtual reality world that you're living in your headset. So right now, there's a great video on on Vimeo that is Glenn Keane from Disney, who is the artist of Ariel. He's holding two handhelds, which are in essence his paintbrushes, as he's drawing the cartoon of Ariel in this virtual reality world. That's where the most potential, we believe, will be, because you're not only engaging the viewer in an engaging experience, because you're looking at things and you're hearing things that are prompting you to move and act, but you're also physically engaging and adding things in with making hand movements or placing things there, picking things up, because you're holding these handhelds that are attached to your VR world.
And so the one that everybody's talking about right now is augmented reality, and that's what Pokemon Go is. That seems to be the popular one right now, but it doesn't compare to the other stuff that you sent and that you just told us about in the Magic Leap stuff. It's like apples and oranges, isn't it?
Absolutely. They're under the same category of digital media. However, they're very different. Augmented reality might take off potentially bigger in a mass audience because you need less hardware with it. Augmented reality mostly just needs a smartphone. There's a lot of smartphones now that have apps and other platforms that are capable of creating, allow you to see the world and then overlay an augmented digital world on top of it so you can see these things, which is why Pokemon, it works. You're walking around the streets and you're seeing on your phone an augmented reality of where these little Pokemon characters are and how you can go and get them. Basically, if you were to compare the two, augmented reality is great for the mass audience. Virtual reality is going to be better for a smaller situation. It's going to be better. You're going to have a higher result of reaching the consumer in a smaller setting. So maybe like a live installation at, like, for instance, a convention, like maybe an auto show, because you need to bring hardware to things and you need people to sit down and immerse themselves into this world. They're disconnecting from the real world. That, I think, is going to be a hiccup going forward for many people, because a lot of people like to control things and see what they're doing. When you're put on a headset, you're letting go of a lot of control. Even though you still get to control what's going on in the virtual world, you're disconnecting from the real world. And I think that's going to be a barrier to success, because many people aren't ready to do that with a new technology. But as time goes on and more success stories come out of incredible VR contents that's being produced, more and more, I think that's going to be something that will not be an issue going forward.
Yeah, because there's a couple of things there. There's the health part of it. Sometimes people get sick to their stomachs, you know, and then there's also, we're already seeing people having car crashes with this Pokemon game.
So absolutely.
It does take you out of reality.
Absolutely. And there is a warning for the virtual headsets. Like, you're not supposed to be in a headset for more than 15 minutes, because your eyes are looking at something that is so close to your face physically. It's only a matter of inches from your face. Your eyeballs and your vision can start to blur after 15 minutes. So for health concerns, absolutely, the virtual reality world can limit itself 15-minute time frame. And in essence, no one really would want to sit in a film for that long, because you really are letting go of a lot of what's going on. So at least when you're watching a movie for 15 minutes, you can turn to the right and see the person next to you or see what's going on in the world. That's not a possibility with virtual reality headsets. And because of that, that's the barrier, which is why I don't think feature films will ever have a future on VR, but there could be a future with feature films and augmented reality.
So give us a sense of how this is working with advertising. And if I don't have a pair of these goggles, how would I be able to consume this advertising?
Great question. That's pretty much the question, the barrier that we're having right now. A lot of clients understand that they need these VR videos because they want to be cutting edge and they want to have the latest and coolest campaign that's running. However, they're running into that same issue of, well, how do we get our mass audience to be able to consume this in a VR experience? A couple brands have given out Google Cardboard. So those are pretty inexpensive to buy. They're about $15 to $25. And then the nice thing about them is, since they are cardboard, you can brand them with your brand if you want. And I know Sports Illustrated and McDonald's have both done this, where they have inserted their like a perforated cutout of a Google Cardboard in their magazine or in the Happy Meals for the McDonald's Happy Meals for their kids that you build on your own, and then you drop your smartphone in, and then you can watch their content that way. So that's something that they're pushing, is by saying we can facilitate you with the headset, just download the app, and then you can see the content, and then they can still be cutting edge. The other side of that is the fact that, yes, you're right, you don't have an audience to see this all in the headsets. You have the option to do to post on social sites, which is Facebook 360 or YouTube 360, where you can view that on your computer, in essence, which would be a flat screen, so you're not going to have the 360 view, but you can use your cursor to move as if your eyeballs or your head was turning in the headset, so you can still get the 360 experience without the headset.
What kind of advertisers are doing this now, or out in front doing this?
All the big advertising agencies. I know that I specifically cover the Midwest market, so in Chicago, Detroit, and Minneapolis. I know there's a ton of agencies on the West Coast and the East Coast that cover them too, and they all have national big brands. Specifically, the ones that I know that have stood out to me as far as big successful campaigns are, like I said, McDonald's. Corona has a nice, VR video coming out. Jack Daniels just released one earlier this month, so that's a cool one to check out. And like I said, the Sports Illustrated 360 swimsuit edition. They did a 360 video of the swimsuit edition. So basically they had all these models in swimsuits, and you can look 360 on the set and see what the photo shoot was like to have a closer experience of engaging the viewers.
Yeah, and they're actually doing that with politics now, with the campaigns for president. You know, you mentioned the swimsuit model there, and I have to ask about pornography, because this is another area that the experts say is going to be burgeoning, that this is one of those areas where virtual reality is going to take that market to a whole new level.
Absolutely. Pornography, like gaming, are going to be the leaders in this industry, because they have already a fan base that is pretty loyal to them to begin with. So if you just add another layer for them to heighten their experience, they're already down for that. So I think that that's definitely something that's going to explode. Pornography, it makes sense, because they're all about getting the viewer into the experience and showing them what's happening on the screen. And this is just, like I said, heightening that experience, drawing the viewer in one more layer. And then if you really get into the VR world outside, like if you were to do pornography with 360, you could see a little bit more of what's going on the screen. But if you were to do the VR world and add another layer with like room scale or hand gloves to touch things, it could really, really change the whole idea of what porn is offering.
There are some people that say that the negative to all of this is that we're going to lose further touch with each other, because they say with screens, we're all looking at our screens now, not having conversations. And with virtual reality, we're just going to get lost in this world by ourselves. Do you agree with that? Is that something we need to watch out for?
I think it is a concern, because I think with technology, especially the past couple of years, the technological advances we've had have been hugely successful to society and improving our society, but also there have been some negatives with it. I think no one really took them into consideration in the first place. However, I don't think any of these negatives are something that would deter someone from pursuing this. Same thing I think is happening with the VR world. There's going to be negatives with it. Like you mentioned, we're going to become more disconnected. We're going to be more connected to our technology. I think both of those are major things to be concerned about. However, I don't think that either of them are bigger or big enough concerns to really shy away from this idea. This could be really changing the way we consume media and the way we consume video content and really engage the viewer into what you're showing them, and could be a totally different experience for everybody. It's no longer passive. This is active viewing.
And it also could be positive and life-changing. They're actually experimenting with this on treating paranoia, and there's other potential health implications or applications for this too.
Correct. Those are the exciting part about it too. So not only do you have the entertainment side, you know, with the gaming and the videos and the porn and everything else that they have to offer in those industries, you have all this research that can be done through VR, where you can virtually do surgeries and like train people that way. Or you can help, like you said, help people with mental health issues and drop them into a situation that's going to put them in that stressful situation, but help them overcome that fear by showing them that this is all just a virtual world. You can get over this. So then when they do go out into the real world and try to do that, they can overcome that fear and maybe help their mental illness condition.
I think you've convinced me to get VR goggles. And that's going to be my next question is, how do I know what to do? Should I just buy the cheap Google ones or how do you choose?
That's a great question. And I think that honestly just comes down to what each person is looking to get out of it. The VR Google Cardboard, I would say, is your entry level Google headset. I mean, a VR headset. It's not great quality, but it gets you the experience and it totally does exactly what you need it to do. I have one of those and I think they're simple and it's easy. It's easy to throw in my bag and take around with me whenever I want to check out the latest VR film. But if you're looking to step it up in quality and get an actual video quality that you'd like to watch over and over again, if you plan on playing a game or if you plan on watching content on VR headsets multiple times over, I would recommend the Samsung Gear. It is only $99 and it works with the Samsung smartphone. That is an easy, very economical solution and also high quality product to get you the high quality results you're looking for. The Oculus Rift, a PlayStation VR, and the HTC Vive are also solutions. Those start to get to be a little bit more expensive. You're jumping up into a couple hundred dollars depending on which route you take. Each one of those has also additional things that you can buy with it, like whether you're going to buy the gloves, like for the Oculus Rift, so you can pick up and touch things in your VR, or with the HTC Vive, you get the handheld, so you get the room scale experience. There's different levels of the experience that you want, but if you're looking to have a basic VR headset, I would definitely start with a Google Cardboard because I think that's your best value for what you're going to get. And if you really love it, as more VR films come out, think about getting a Samsung Gear VR.
And for our listeners on the opening bell that are investors, this sounds like it might be a really good place to invest.
Absolutely. I would definitely say this is going to be the next technological forefront that if you want to be ahead of the curve, this is something to pay attention to. Facebook has bought into this. Google has bought into this. Apple has companies in this industry. All of the forefront startup companies understand that this is something to be paying attention to. So they're jumping into it right now. And if you're looking to invest, I would say now is the time because 2000, like we said earlier, 2016 is the breakout year. And by 2020, I think 2/3 of the population, there was a quote that I read that said 2/3 of the population will have one headset in their household at least. So it's definitely something that has a huge potential for growth.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, I'm Dave Schreiber. Asian stock markets were mixed today. Investors reassessed the global economy following the International Monetary Bank's global growth cut. They remained positive on corporate earnings reports and on the European Central Bank's policy meeting set for later this week. On Wall Street Tuesday, stocks ended the day mostly lower after some disappointing earnings reports from companies like Netflix. The S&P lost 3 points, the Dow edged up 25 points, and the Nasdaq Composite declined 19 points. Macy's is testing a mobile tool that uses artificial intelligence and allows shoppers to get answers customized to the store that they're in, like where they can find a particular brand or what is in stock, things that they would normally ask a sales associate for face-to-face. I'm Dave Schreiber, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It is a rough day for United today, the latest of the airlines to report earnings troubles. United yesterday reported after the bell a 50% drop in net earnings for the second quarter, revenues declining, and the company is resuming paying taxes as that company does that, but they still beat Wall Street estimates, just as Delta did last week as they reported earnings as well. The Chicago-based United reported $588 million in net earnings for the quarter, excluding special items, down from nearly $1.2 billion. after last week's tragedy in France and the latest terrorist attack here in the United States, travel reservations have been cut around the world. They're seeing that at faircompare.com, where we find Rixini this morning. Rixini is the CEO of Fair Compare. You can find him on Twitter at Rixini, faircompare.com. And Rick is with us this morning in Dallas. Rick, so what are you seeing around the world?
Yeah, we actually looked at the last, 5 days after, 6 days after the event in Nice that occurred, and we are seeing search volume, which is the amount of people actually searching for destinations in France, including Paris, Nice, and two other cities, down about 25%. We saw the same exact pattern back in early to mid-November after the Paris event, where it lasted about 2 weeks or so, and then search volume started to come back up. We also see, along with that drop in demand, the drop in price of about 11 or 12% for ticket prices into France. Now, that hasn't dropped the prices to places like Italy and Rome, in the UK with London, but specifically to France, this usually has a lingering effect for at least a couple weeks.
As somebody who's experienced in this area, what can you tell people if they're planning trips to some of these countries? There, one person we interviewed at the airport the other day said that she's just scared to go anywhere because these attacks seem to just be coming at random anywhere. What would you tell travelers?
Yeah, there's no doubt that there's jitters. I just got back from a two-week trip to Italy, had a great time with six people in our group, didn't have any issues. I've traveled to Europe many, many times, and the most important part, there's sort of two pieces of the puzzle. One is for just keeping your head on a swivel all the time, especially in large groups over there, which you're just going to do in general. But also just the general, the number one issue, for example, in Italy is pickpockets and a variety of other issues, people taking phones if you leave them on the table and whatnot. So if you are traveling, absolutely don't take anything that you can't replace or that you wouldn't pay extra money to. Valuables at home and all this stuff that you don't normally have, as valuables there. It's very important when you get there. Also, just be careful of a variety of other, destination issues like pickpockets. There's also all sorts of research you can do on the State Department website. They have a great website that talks about each particular issue, every country, every city. Go on there. That's departmentstate.gov. And it's just really about common sense. I mean, when you're in large groups like that, it makes sense. And by the way, you shouldn't be just doing that when you're traveling to Europe. You should be doing it in the United States as well.
And once you're in one of those countries, I saw again and again after this attack in Nice, Americans saying, we didn't know what to do afterwards. We didn't know where to go or that should be something, too, that if you're in a foreign country, know how to get that information.
Yeah, exactly. And this is about sort of studying before you go there. Know what cities you're going to go to, know where the consulates are, know what the hotel policies and priorities are, know what your airline's issues if you want to come back early, for example. This can also happen with medical emergencies as well. When you're going to Europe, you have to sort of plan ahead. You're going to be away for a week or two. What do you do with your health care plan? What do you do in the case of some sort of emergency? It's always good to have a contingency plan. That way you don't have to think, you just do it.
And also, this is something that is, if you're in a foreign country, the U.S. government does have plans in place. They will help you if you need it.
No, absolutely. They may not have a consulate in your city or an embassy in the particular city, but they have one nearby. They typically have resources in the larger cities, the smaller cities. Actually, some of the other locations also know how to get a hold of anybody that you need to get a hold of. Also, you want to make sure that you have enough cash on you to make transactions. Sometimes credit cards don't work as well as they should in certain cities. So just a little bit of pre-planning. And I've been to Europe almost 3 dozen times now and really haven't had an issue hardly at all. A couple times missed flights I got stuck in airline strikes before in France and in Germany before. So stuff does happen and you have to have contingency plans.
It is earnings season and Delta earlier has reported its second quarter earnings were higher. The revenue actually fell year over year, but they are doing good. United reports this week as well. Some of these airlines, though, the trend is going downward. Why is that?
Yeah, revenue is down because demand is down slightly. I think part of it's the economy and the people's ability. So instead of, business travelers paying $900 for that ticket, they're now paying, $875. Instead of leisure travelers traveling domestically, instead of paying $360, they're paying $340. I think that's partially around demand and the economy. And on the flip side, the reason they're making profits is fuel prices continue to be low, and airlines have not dropped, for example, very dramatically fuel surcharges into Europe. Now, we did see some, for example, today, United filing a bunch of really inexpensive airfares in the $700 to $900 range into Europe to a variety of places. So that's partially related to, demand dropping. So in general, I think it's you're talking about the economy and fuel prices. That's where you're going to see the airlines continue to probably have some pressure on pricing, but continue to make profits.
And that transitions nicely into get us out of town. And where are these fares going to that you're talking about? Get us out of town cheaper.
There's a magic day. Well, we call the magic day, which is August the 23rd for departures on or after August 23rd, both domestically and in the U.S. It corresponds clearly with kids going back to school. That's why we see the prices drop. But out of Chicago, if you're heading to the Northwest, you have Seattle and Portland under $200 round trip. That also includes Los Angeles, San Diego, and San Francisco under $180 round trip out of Chicago. Places like in South Florida with Miami and Orlando under $150 round trip. These are all incredibly good prices. Boston, New York, Washington, D.C., all under $160 round trip. Literally, if you're traveling on or after the 23rd and you pick the right days, Tuesday, Wednesday, Saturday being the cheapest days, if you're paying over $200 for that flight, you're probably paying too much.
There are a lot of these magic dates, Rick, in getting to know you and talking to you over the last few months. I guess the best advice to people is to follow Fair Compare, follow you on Twitter, because you have all the magic dates.
Yeah, we're studying literally billions of itineraries a day, looking at them from a variety of feeds and trying to ferret out the best deals. Even this morning, my co-founder was sending out a bunch of crazy stuff that we saw all across the board on United. So check out our blogs, and you'll save some money on your next trip.
All right, travel safely.
Hey, thanks, Steve.
Rick Cini is the president and the CEO of FairCompare.com, at Rick Cini on Twitter, at FairCompare. You can follow him for good deals on airfare.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It is 5:51. Welcome back to the program. On the WGN Market Desk this morning, Dow futures are pointing up this morning, up about 68 points. The S&P and NASDAQ futures higher as well. A couple of earnings reports expected out a little bit later on today. The question is, how did the commodities markets do yesterday? And what's it look like for the day ahead? Here's Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Another down day in the grain market yesterday, and a down day in the livestock market as well. We continue to have great crop weather. Yesterday, we reported 76% of the corn crop, 71% of the soybean crop, good to excellent, unchanged from a week ago. Some of the highest ratings for mid-July in the last 20 years. And in the report, 56% of the corn is in pollination stage. That compares to the five-year average of 46%. So crops are on the way. And as a result, December corn ended down 14¾ cents. New crop November soybeans down 38½ cents again yesterday. September wheat settled down 11½ cents as it followed in the grain market lower. Turning to the livestock trade, Chicago Mercantile Exchange live cattle contracts closed sharply lower yesterday, undercut by technical-related selling that totally wiped out the gains made on Monday. August live cattle ended down $2.05 at $110.40 a hundredweight. And as we look at the cash hog market, down for the ninth day in a row, that affected the lean hog contracts at the Merck as well. August hogs down 47 cents to 77.35 a hundredweight. Today marks the opening of the Chicagoland County Fair season. Kane County Fair on Randall Road in St. Charles opens the gates today, keeps them open until Sunday night. Go out and enjoy a county fair. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You too. Of course, county fairs mean stuff on a stick, corn dogs, you name it. County fair season, one of my favorite times of the eating season, really, the eating year. eating season, by the way, is pretty much all year long. Here's what's coming up today on the markets. A couple of things that we need to watch out for. No big economic reports out today, but American Express is the next to report quarterly earnings. We'll release those results after the bell rings today. Here are some stocks set to watch today. Microsoft, one of them, after they reported gangbuster revenue yesterday. Also, watch Nintendo down this morning pre-market. They've been up the last few days because of Pokemon Go, but they're set to fall today, perhaps, according at least to the pre-market numbers that we're seeing today. That's generally what we'll be watching as we watch your money throughout the morning, through the rest of the morning on the Steve Cochran Show coming up next, and throughout the rest of the day as well. We'll be back bright and early tomorrow morning with another edition of the Opening Bell.